Thank you for joining us for another podcast from the Commonwealth Club.
Now comes the fun part. Good evening, everybody, and thanks so much for being here, especially when we're competing with the Warriors. So, go Warriors. I'm Peter Fish, and I'm very pleased to serve as the chair of the Commonwealth Club's 88th Annual California Book Awards. Both the club and the awards have a long and distinguished history. The club began in 1903 as a forum where members could learn, discuss, and debate the most important issues of the day. The Book Awards began in 1931 as a way of honoring California's enormous literary creativity. In the decades since, both the club and the Book Awards have succeeded magnificently in their missions. Since 1931, the writers who have won California Book Awards have included many of the lasting luminaries of American literature, among them John Steinbeck, Wallace Stegner, Robert Haas, Amy Tan, Joan Didion, and Lucia Berlin. This year's roster of winners is the equal of any in the awards history. In setting, our winning books range from a California women's prison to 1990s Columbia to a Vienna inhabited by magical dragons. In subject matter, they range from an examination of the trauma inflicted by childhood abuse to the community-shaping warmth of a big city public library to the challenges of adolescence in Silicon Valley. Along with the recognitions that the awards carry, there are also cash grants to winners. These come thanks to the generous endowment by the late Martha Heasley Cox, founder of the Center for Steinbeck Studies at San Jose State University, a longtime Commonwealth Club member and a longtime Book Awards juror. Many thanks to her and to her memory. Now, a few more thank yous. I'd like to start by acknowledging the jury who selected the finalists and winners, a months-long process that entails a vast amount of reading and some fierce debates, but which is also enormous fun. Our jurors are librarians, editors and other publishing professionals, booksellers, authors and professors, people who love books and who take the responsibility of evaluating them with seriousness and passion. I'd like the jury members who are here to stand for just a moment while I name you. Emily Belaine?
Yes.
Allison Hoover Bartlett? Rosalind Chang? Susan Frankel? Denise Newman? Sarah Rosenthal? Gabrielle Seltz? Julia Flynn Seiler? And Mary Taher. Thanks to all of you. I'd also like to thank Gloria Duffy, President and CEO of the Commonwealth Club, who makes this whole shebang possible, George Dobbins, Vice President of Programming, Kalina Gregory, who runs the genuinely wonderful reading group based on the Book Awards, and Alex Rodriguez-Hernandez, who is Director of Facilities, plays a key role in this event. And I know my fellow jurors join me in giving two people special thanks for handling the vast task of gathering hundreds of eligible books from publishers all over the country and getting them here to the Commonwealth Club and then to the Book Award jurors. Priscilla Vivio, who started this year's process, and Sean Burmeister, who took over in medias res, as we say in the lit biz, and managed it perfectly. One of the privileges and dilemmas that comes with these awards is the fact that we're presented an extraordinary variety of good writing to choose from. In addition to tonight's winners, I highly recommend taking a look at the finalists over which we agonized, because they are all exceptional. Now we'll flow right into the awards with Mary Taher presenting our Fiction and First Fiction Awards.
Hi, I'm Mary Taher, here to present the California Book Awards in First Fiction and Fiction. Silver medal in First Fiction, Ingrid Rojas Contreras, Fruit of the Drunken Tree. This book is so beautifully rendered, it's hard to believe it is a debut. A coming-of-age story, Fruit of the Drunken Tree, takes place during the Pablo Escobar era in Colombia and alternates chapters between a young, relatively pampered girl, Chula, and the family's live-in maid, Petrona, from a slum in the nearby mountains. Contreras reveals the horror, confusion, and often numbing effect of growing up amidst daily kidnappings, bombings, and murders of innocent people by the army and by the guerrillas. This is a memorable book by a gifted writer. The Commonwealth Club presents Ingrid Rojas Contreras with the Silver Medal in First Fiction.
Thank you so much. I'm very grateful to the Commonwealth Club and to the jury. In writing this book, I went through an immigration process, and my character, Chula, who comes to the U.S. as a refugee, became a citizen before I became a citizen, which I thought was very interesting. And the other thing is that since I became a citizen here in California, I kind of feel like I am by default Californian, right? Because I came to be here. This is a book about migration and both, you know, migrations that we wish to have and that come true and migrations that do not come true. And so one character, you know, comes to the U.S. as a refugee, and the other one is kind of stuck in Colombia. Going through the immigration system myself, I found myself thinking about all the people that can't leave, and I wanted to write a book that included those two points of view. So I'm very thankful. I'm very thankful to be here and to also join the ranks of so many great writers who have also won this award. So thank you.
The gold medal in First Fiction, Tommy Orange, They're There. This stunning novel, comprised of interwoven stories of 12 Native Americans living in Oakland, weighs the gift and the burden of cultural identity. Orange gives readers an unforgettable insight into the addiction, poverty, and suicide that plague this urban community, and at the same time shows us the strength of the spirituality and connection within it. There There's prologue is a spectacular essay on the brutal legacy of Native Americans, both the history of Indian subjugation and cutting riffs on stereotypes. Its ending culminates in a shattering, all-too-believable event at a powwow in the Oakland Coliseum. To quote Margaret Atwood, an astonishing literary debut, the Commonwealth Club presents Tommy Orange with the gold medal in First Fiction. Tommy Orange was unable to attend in person tonight, but we are pleased to welcome him here on video. Hey, Tommy.
Hello. I'm so sorry I couldn't be there in person tonight. I'm here in the foothills of the Sierras near Yosemite in Angels Camp, California, in my son's bedroom, where I sometimes write. It's especially meaningful to me to get this award in my home state and where my novel takes place. California and Oakland will always be home, and they were both always where/what I wanted to write a novel about. I'm so grateful to be honored and acknowledged in this way. I'd like to thank the Commonwealth Club for this award. I've seen that more and more books about and that take place in California have been published in more recent years. God knows we've heard enough about New York. There are so many stories and communities to be represented here that haven't been in literature. I'd like to thank my publisher, everyone at Knopf, for their undying support, my publicists, Gabrielle Brooks and Kate Rundy, my editor, Jordan Pavlin, and my agent, Nicola Raji. Thank you as well to all of the authors considered for this award and to the judges for their time and consideration. Thank you.
Silver medal in fiction, Anne Rafe, Winter Kept Us Warm. Anne Rafe artfully explores the lives of two men and a woman who meet in Berlin during the winter shortly after World War II. Winter Kept Us Warm is a quiet but devastating novel about loneliness and absence, friendship, and love. With nuance and assurance, Rafe shows us how secrets, the trauma of war, and emotional loss drive these complex characters to drift apart, despite the fact that two marry and the third raises their two children. Rafe skillfully handles the passage of time as she jumps between the war era and later decades spanning a 40-year period, always with a remarkable eye for detail and settings. The Commonwealth Club presents Anne Rafe with the Silver Medal in Fiction.
Thank you, everybody. There is a line from my book that I wanted to begin with. I tried to look it up, but I couldn't find it, so I'll have to paraphrase. One of the protagonists, Isaac, a historian, says something like, "That's what we human beings do. We destroy everything just so we can rebuild it, and then we destroy it again." I'm sure the author said it much better. The book is about rebuilding in the aftermath of a great destruction. It begins in Berlin in 1945, when violence and the memory of violence was everywhere, but when people were starting to pick up the pieces. They could smell the future in the air and start believing in it, in peace, in settling in. My parents were both refugees from this great destruction that we call World War II and the Holocaust. Though my parents escaped, my mother from Vienna to Panama to a village in Bolivia on the edge of the Amazon, and then to New York, and my father from the Soviet Union to Germany to France to Portugal, and then also to New York, so many millions did not. Just as so many today are trapped also in the midst of destruction. Around the world, at the borders of this country, even right here in this city, there are millions facing displacement and brutality, struggling to survive, being stripped of their dignity. It was because my parents survived, because there were people who helped them escape, who took them in, that I had the luxury of growing up in the peaceful, albeit bland and dull suburbs of New Jersey, and the luxury to become a writer. My father, a historian on whom Isaac, the historian in my novel, is based, was fond of saying that human beings are not really capable of learning from history, that the only reason to study history is because it's interesting. Though we never discussed this, I'm sure he would say the same thing about literature, that it doesn't have the power to make us better human beings, that literature cannot change the world. I think my natural cynicism makes me inclined to agree with my father, yet despite myself, I do believe that the mere act of creation helps to keep the forces of destruction at bay. So I will keep writing, and I will keep reading. And so, thank you to all of you gathered here today, both writers and readers, who continue to believe in the power of stories. Thank you to the Commonwealth Club and to California, to the city where I have found my place, to everyone at Counterpoint Press, and there's a whole bevy of them here today, Alicia and Lena and Miyako and Jenny. Thank you also to my editor, Dan Smetanka, my agent, and to my wife, Lori, for she is my harshest critic, and I couldn't do it without her. Thank you very much.
Gold medal in fiction, Rachel Kushner, The Mars Room. The Mars Room is a persuasive argument for prison reform and a testament to poverty's role in creating criminals, yet the book never slips into the polemical. This extraordinary novel gives us the heartbreaking story of Rami Hall, serving two life sentences, who has left behind a young son. Her anguish over his well-being builds over the course of the book, along with other harrowing narrative threads. With a sharp sense of humor and surprising detail, Kushner vividly portrays life in prison and the working class neighborhoods of San Francisco in the 1980s, and uses real life figures like Henry Thoreau and Ted Kaczynski to an ingenious effect. Kushner's language is always evocative, her plotting adroit, and her transcendent ending a tour de force. The Commonwealth Club presents Rachel Kushner with the gold medal in fiction. Rachel Kushner is unable to be here tonight. Her friend Lola Luterio is accepting on her behalf.
Good evening. My name is Lola. I'm honored to accept this award for Rachel tonight, and these are the words that she has asked me to say. I'm so pleased to have my work recognized by the Commonwealth Club in the form of the gold medal for fiction. If I could be here tonight, I certainly would. To be a Californian is to live in a state that is, in many ways, for better and also for worse, the leading edge of society. What we see here, incomparable geographic beauty, a thriving and globally skilled economy, an incredible cultural diversity, but also a high rate of poverty, industrial farming that has poisoned the water that 1 million drink, and a carceral system that has flourished to the detriment of those swallowed into it, is the beauty and also the brutality of the near future. California, to me, is a crystal ball. It is also a real place, not a metaphor. I've asked my friend Lola to accept this prize because she's the daughter of a friend I made at the age of 10, Emily Goldman, when we were kids in the avenues of the sunset. Emily is a juvenile defender for the city of San Francisco and has devoted her life to advocating for kids, for their right to a violence-free life, their right to childhood. While I was writing The Mars Room, I was in deep conversation with Emily about contemporary society, who goes to jail and prison in California, and who does not. Our children, mine and hers, have opportunities, but they also have a responsibility to see the world for what it is, to recognize injustice. This award was famously and controversially given to John Steinbeck for his novel The Grapes of Wrath. Some were not pleased that a novel was chosen that did not depict California in a positive manner. Steinbeck, a child of the Salinas Valley and a student of the shifting clouds over the Gabilan Mountains, was no stranger to the most exquisite features of California and to what it meant to be a Californian, to appreciate and witness beauty and goodness, sure, but also to notice, to see, to perceive reality in its full range, and not to pull back from depicting reality. It is in this tradition that I am honored to receive this prize. Thank you.
And now I'd like to introduce Rosalind Chang, who will be presenting the Juvenile Literature Award.
Happy California Book Awards evening. I hope that you're enjoying it. I'm Rosalind Chang, here to present the California Book Awards in Juvenile Literature. 11-year-old Maggie and a gentle golden-eyed dragon named Grisha meet the 20th century Austria during a time when magic is quietly fading away from the world. The two lonely characters become fast friends, and together they set out to answer the question everyone has forgotten, where have the missing dragons gone, and is there a way to save them? Throughout The Language of Spells, author Garrett Weyer expertly weaves fantasy and magic with true historical events and subtle details. The book's memorable characters and its tender expression of evergreen themes such as courage, honor, friendship, and magic will cast a spell and enchant young readers. The Commonwealth Club presents Garrett Weyer with the gold medal in Juvenile Books.
So grateful to the Commonwealth Club for putting the novel The Language of Spells and me on a list with all the amazing writers in this room. I have been fangirling all night. I am just thrilled to be in your company. Thank you so much, you guys. The Language of Spells actually started life as a book called The Poet's Daughter, and it's about an 11-year-old girl who meets a dragon in a hotel bar. They spend a lot of time in hotel bars, but they're European ones where, yeah, you can get a very stiff drink, but also some pretty amazing cake. Maggie, who is the girl, and Grisha, the dragon, travel through Europe hoping to undo a curse on the European dragons who lost their home in the Black Forest during World War II. Those dragons are all now homeless and living in Vienna. Friendship and the ability to see magic is important to the story, but so is saving any living creature from being homeless on their own continent. Now, as the daughter of an Austrian refugee, I definitely had World War II on my mind. That's why it was called The Poet's Daughter. I was thinking of my dad. But the reasons that I love stories, especially stories with children and animals in them, is that those stories can speak to more than one set of people in a way that facts never could. All of us, whether we breathe fire or speak Spanish, deserve a home, if not in our country, then certainly in our continent. And I'm glad that my characters had the chance to fight for their belief in that right. On a personal note, I came to California in 2017, intending to stay for about 6 months. I was going to go back to the East Coast, where I knew home was. I wasn't sure where on East it was, but I was pretty sure I was going to go home. And then the state did its magic, as it will. And earlier this year, I bought a house in Long Beach. So I want to say thank you to the Commonwealth Club and to Chronicle, my erudite and stylish California publisher. This feels like the most tremendous welcome home present. Thank you so much.
And now I'll introduce the award in young adult literature. High school senior Danny Chang, his parents and his closest friends have a seemingly good life together. A rosy future even awaits Danny at the college of his choice. But Danny's in the dark, as are those around him. As questions arise and secrets are uncovered, complex issues such as international adoption, queer identity, immigration, teen suicide, and human imperfection come to the light. Sometimes tender, sometimes heartbreaking, the underlying theme of the universal human need for connection clearly resonates in Picture Us in the Light. The Commonwealth Club presents Kelly Lloyd Gilbert with the gold medal in Young Adult Books.
Thank you so much, and thank you to the Commonwealth Club and all the jurors so much for having me today. I started this book several years ago. It was actually supposed to come out 3 years ago, but that didn't happen. And it was a really difficult book for me to write, I think because I didn't fully have a handle on the story. I knew I wanted to write about an Asian American family, and I knew I wanted to write about the very singular experience of growing up in Cupertino, which is where I come from. But it wasn't until after the 2016 election that I also realized that the story I wanted to tell was about people who weren't safe from their government and who faced constant peril in trying to achieve the things we all want, like security and family and love. People ask me a lot why I write for young people, and I find that the ones who ask that are usually not the ones who are actually themselves spending any real time with young people. But I think the stories for young people are so vital because they're the ones who have to live with the world that we've bequeathed them. So many of them have a very clear-eyed sense of what that world is and who it is, and isn't safe for, and all the ways that we failed them that they're going to have to try to clean up. I also think that if you spend much time around teenagers, you know that they instinctively mistrust the kind of platitudes we give them about things like safety and freedom and the future. And basically, they're always looking for the ways that you might be BSing them. They are hunger for truth and authenticity and challenge and hope. And I think that so many of them want these stories that truthfully reflect the world back to them the way that they understand it, with all its shortcomings, so that they can decide what they're going to do about it. I am a lifelong and third generation Californian, and I'm so honored by this award, particularly because so much of it was born from, of the book was born from my own relationship to this state. I'm grateful to my publisher, Hyperion, for letting me write this book. To my editor, Laura Schreiber, for all her guidance on it, and my agent, Adrian Rances, or Helen, for making it possible. And I especially wanted to thank my family who are here today, my aunts and my grandmother, my parents, Kirk and Terry, my husband, Jesse, and my children, Audrey and Zach, for all their support. In a time when facts can be alternative and those in power seek to distort reality, I think that stories are really one of our last shared communal truths. So may we keep doing the work with the stories. Thank you so much.
And now I'd like to introduce Denise Newman, who will be presenting the Poetry Award.
Hi, everyone. I'm Denise Newman, and I'm here to present the California Book Award in Poetry. The gold medal in poetry for Samantha Giles is Total Recall. Total Recall is a powerful and unsettling exploration of how memory in the face of trauma is precariously constructed, not only by the individual, but also by authority figures looking to cover over cruelty and abuse. It forces the reader to sort out the pieces of a childhood that won't cohere, buckling around the violence of forgetting and the violence of being forced to forget forgetting. Giles employs multiple genres and forms, from memoir and thriller to testimony, spells, and charms, in order to relentlessly investigate what it means to pry apart the forms of false family narratives. Emily Dickinson famously said, "If I feel physically as if the top of my head were taken off, I know that is poetry." This is a rare work that lives up to Dickinson's observation. The Commonwealth Club presents Samantha Giles with the gold medal for poetry.
Well, it's nice. The air conditioning is nice. It's such a bizarre thing to be in this place. It's extremely lovely. I'm not complaining. But as most of us in the room who are writers know, it's such a solitary sort of trollish activity to obsessively eke out a story or a book. And then to be in the public eye suddenly is like a translation that's really, I don't know. Did you think it's bizarre? It's a little bizarre. Particularly because this book began with an irritation and an anger and like a irritant. So it's lovely and disorienting to be congratulated for it. But it's such a gift to hear Denise, who's over there. It's such a gift to hear someone say back to you what you wrote, to see the thing clearly from another vantage, the way that Denise just described the book, and to show you the contours of the elephant. You could only describe yourself by touching the leg or whatever that parable is. Anyway, thank you for letting me see my book from your perspective. Another friend recently described my writing to me as a series of complicated origami constructions that fold in and out and away from each other. And though I never would have thought myself that that's what I'm doing, I think she's right, which is only to say that I'm about to construct a crane or a box or a fortune teller, one of those things, of what I think all the feelings are of me standing here in this moment. The most obvious shape of this origami of feelings is gratitude, of course. First and foremost to the Commonwealth Club, whose generosity towards and curiosity about the civic and cultural life of California, born and bred, lived here almost my life, in particular, and its diverse literatures that bring us all together tonight. I'm so very honored to be a part of this evening. Look under that fold and you'll find dismay and reverence for the jury of the California Book Awards, who is probably, other than this 1 hour tonight of thankless, otherwise thankless activities of reading hundreds of books, is amazing and incredible. I'm in awe of all of you, and thank you so much. On the other side of this crane or box or whatever it is I'm folding up right now is my love and appreciation for Krupskaya. My publisher, Stephanie Young, is here, the press that published this book, and who have published many of my favorite books in the past 20-some odd years of their existence. It's interesting. Poetry is like its own sort of non-industry momentum. Almost all of the presses that publish poetry are small press. They're all volunteer. It's all out of love. I'm so grateful to be a part of that network. And because they're so small, they become friends. And so I have to say thank you to all my friends who have kept me a writer and allowed me to write this book, who read this book in manuscript, who helped make this book better, who helped make me better every day. Again, the whole small sitting in the room entrenched in a troll-like manner. My friends get me outside. What's the last thing I want to say? The thing that is nested inside the thing that's nested inside the thing is that I wish I had never written this book, and I wish this book didn't have to be written, and I wish this book resonated with no one. But until such time as those stories of sexual and physical and emotional violence are ended, I'm so grateful that this book has been recognized. Thanks so much.
You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Hear thousands of our podcasts on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. And when you're in the Bay Area, please join us live for one of our 500 programs each year. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org. Now, back to our program.
And now I'd like to introduce Julia Flynn Seiler, who will be presenting the nonfiction awards.
Thank you, Denise. I'm Julia Flynn Seiler. I'm here to present the California Book Awards in nonfiction. Silver medal in nonfiction goes to Shane Bauer, American Prison. This is a powerful and timely account of Bauer's experience working as a guard in a private prison in Louisiana, weaving together the history of profit-driven incarceration with his own frightening and dehumanizing experiences as a guard working for $9 an hour. Bauer offers us a firsthand view of a fast-growing industry and one which is profiting from this administration's immigrant detention policies. It's a landmark in investigative journalism and storytelling. The Commonwealth Club presents Shane Bauer with the Silver Medal.
Thank you so much to the Commonwealth Club and to the judges. Also want to thank my editor, Scott Moyers at Penguin Press, and my agent, Bill Clegg. I believe that when we look back a century from now, mass incarceration will be one of the great shames of our time. The United States currently has 5% of the world's population, yet we hold 25% of the world's prisoners. 2.2 million people are behind bars in this country. That's a 500% increase over the last 40 years. My book tackles only one small aspect of this massive problem, but it is a particularly brutal one. Corporations in the United States lock up 130,000 of our nation's prisoners. Two-thirds of all immigrant detainees are held by private prison companies. The company's shares are traded on the New York Stock Exchange. These corporations lobby politicians, make campaign contributions, and fight against legislation that would allow the public greater access to information about what occurs inside their prisons. The Corrections Corporation of America did not want this story told. The company threatened to sue me when it found out what I was writing. There are so many people whose lives and memories they would have preferred to stay unrecognized and forgotten. There's Robert Scott, an inmate I met while I was undercover. Scott lost his legs and fingers to gangrene because CoreCivic wouldn't spend the money to send him to the hospital. CoreCivic, I should say, is the new name of the Corrections Corporation of America. There was Damien Costley, who repeatedly went on hunger strike to petition for mental health care. Instead of helping him, CoreCivic threw him in a solitary cell, naked. Costley eventually hanged himself, and when he died, he weighed 71 pounds. The company never reported his suicide. For-profit prisons have existed in various forms since our country was founded. Thousands of convicts perished while being driven by the whip and all manner of torture a century after slavery ended. Prisoners were forced to labor from dawn till dusk for cotton planters, coal mining companies, and railroad corporations. For the profit of private businessmen, convicts in the decades following the Civil War died at a higher rate than enslaved people once did. In some states, one in four convicts died every year, a rate on par with Soviet gulags. This legacy of slavery reaches into the present. In the 1960s, the founder of CCA ran a prison plantation the size of Manhattan, where prisoners picked cotton from dawn till dusk, and where so-called houseboys served him and his family on their plantation home. This man is still alive today, and his company brings in over $1 billion of revenue every year. Sometimes it seems that people like this are untouchable. Thank you for this award and for reminding us that they aren't.
gold medal in nonfiction to Susan Orlean, the library book. We all love libraries, but Susan Orlean's delightfully unexpected book, centered around the fire that destroyed the Los Angeles Public Library in 1986, takes us on a journey that explores not only the arson and the aspiring actor accused of burning down the city's central library, but also the fascinating characters involved with it since its earliest days, from its first buckskin-clad male librarian to the dedicated and patient reference librarians, fielding questions both deeply personal and bizarre. Orleans is a beautiful storyteller who has woven together various threads with an unrivaled eye for funny and moving details. With this book, she's written an unforgettable love letter to libraries and librarians. The Commonwealth Club presents Susan Orleans with the gold medal in nonfiction. Susan Orleans was unable to attend the event tonight, but her friend Manjula Martin is accepting on her behalf.
I'm obviously not Susan Orlean. She asked me to be here. She was really heartbroken that she couldn't attend. She was super stoked to be receiving this award. I had the privilege of working with Susan when she participated in an anthology I edited, and we share a publisher, Simon & Schuster. So she sent a few words of thanks, and I'm going to read them. When I began this book in 2011, I was new to California, and the whole place amazed me. Writing the library book became my introduction to the state, to its rich history and buoyant future. I'm so honored to receive the California Book Award. Thank you to the committee and the judges for this recognition. I want to share this honor with the staff at the LA Public Library, who patiently endured my 6 years of research, and with all librarians everywhere who do good work every day. Thank you.
Now I'd like to welcome Peter Fish up to present our final award.
So I'll be presenting the last two awards of the Book Awards this evening. And the first one is the category that we call Californiana. And the gold medal in Californiana goes to Miriam Powell for her book, The Browns of California. California has been shaped by tectonics, weather, and people, and perhaps especially by former governors Pat and Jerry Brown. In a historical narrative spanning the gold rush to climate change, Miriam Powell delivers a sweeping, comprehensive, detailed saga for our times. The Browns of California, the family dynasty that transformed a state and shaped a nation, receives the Commonwealth Club Award in Californiana.
So thank you so much to the Commonwealth Club and to the jurors, and I'll echo everyone else's comments about the amazing amount of work that you all did reading all of these books. It's also especially meaningful to me to be at the Commonwealth Club again, because as a Southern Californian, I will defend Southern California in terms of its reading and everything else about it, but the Commonwealth Club is part of creating this really rich tradition of readers and culture and the civic life of California in a way that I wish that we had in Los Angeles, I will say that. So thank you for being part of that tradition and for including me in that and honoring me in that way. I do want to thank my publisher, Bloomsbury, who have done an amazing job with this book, and there are a whole cast of characters, all of whom I will say are women, from the head of Bloomsbury down to my publicist and the artist and my editor. And they were just took remarkable care with this book and believed that a book about California history was important, which not everyone in New York does. And I will say that, and I can say that as a former New Yorker. I moved here almost 20 years ago, which to me feels like a long time, but I know that there are many people in this room whose roots in California go back for generations, and that I'm a relative newcomer. And for me, this book was a way to learn and to explore and to really delve into the remarkable history of this state. through this family, who I think I've been asked kind of before, why were more things not written about the Browns before? And there's one biography of Pat Brown. And I think had this been an East Coast family, it would have gotten a lot of more attention than it has. There's still a real bias in this world, as Tommy Orange said, enough about New York. And I wrote this book because, so for me, it was a way to explore the rich history of this state and to write about the things that make California really special and different and unique and an important place and a force in not only the country, but really in the world as at large. When I started this book, I called Kevin Starr, who was very generous with his time, and I talked to him about sort of his vision of what the family could be and what its role could be. And then I said, but you know, I'm not from California. I'm new to so much of this history. And he said, that gives you a perspective to write it that will be of value. And I'm sorry he didn't live to see the book. But I wrote it for, I think a lot as a writer about audience when I'm writing. And there are multiple audiences that you write for, or I do. And one of the audiences for me were people in New York and on the East Coast and in the rest of the country who really don't understand so much about California. And it's my hope that this book will help to educate them. And it's a book that I wish that someone had said to me when I was moving here, you know, this is a book that you can read that will help you understand California, because it is so rich in its history. And in many ways, I think, so misunderstood. So that was important to me, but this honor is particularly resonant because obviously I was for it to ring true to people who are Californians and study California history and culture and literature is very, very meaningful to me. So thank you again for that. And the last thing I would say is, you know, I began writing this book in 2015, I guess. The world in the United States was a very different place at that time. And one of the things that has meant a lot to me is hearing from readers, people I don't know, who just email me. And one of the things that they have said consistently was, thank you for reading this book because it gave me hope. And it's not that the book is some sort of an ode to California or to the family. It's a very, California, as people have said tonight, is a very mixed bag. But one of the characteristics, I think, of California and that this family exemplifies is resilience. And the state has come out of bad times before and continues to be able to recover in certain ways that that the family does as well. And there's probably no better example of that than the governor who was the youngest and the oldest governor of California and completely reinvented himself any number of times, which is very much in the spirit of California. So I'm glad to be able to give people a sense of hope and that there is a future worth fighting for, and that California's values in many ways are sort of something for us all to hold on to at this moment in time. So thanks again.
Now our final award, the award Contribution to Publishing. And the gold medal in Contribution to Publishing goes to Tyler Green and the University of California Press for the book Carlton Watkins, Making the West American. The Contribution to Publishing Award allows us to call out a book that expands our sense of what to expect between two covers. Carlton Watkins was a great 19th century photographer whose iconic images of the Yosemite Valley and the Mariposa Grove continue to influence our vision of these places today. Historian Tyler Green's definitive biography shows how Watkins captured the very workings of Manifest Destiny as it unfolded, photographing mining, railroads, palm orchards, and more. His book is a riveting, deep look at California and the way art impacts history. For Carlton Watkins, Making the West American, Tyler Green and the University of California Press received the award in Contribution to Publishing.
I want to thank the Commonwealth Club and the jurors for all the time they put in, and to the club for its engagement with what we do. Thanks to UC Press for making the book beautiful. If you pick one up later, be sure to take off the cover and look at what's on the inside of it, which was just like one of the great UC Press ideas. One of the fun things about being here tonight has been hearing the other authors talk about their engagement with the West and with California. And Watkins, who got here in 1850 and remained active until 1890, didn't die until 1916, his work was a beginning of much of the things we've heard here tonight, from industrial agriculture to Yosemite. Sorry, not dragons. But it's been fun to hear how Watkins was engaged with a lot of that. As a critic and as a journalist, I was interested in the era, in writing about how artists engaged with or impacted the world around them and the history that came after them. And Watkins does that. But I think any time you kind of devote 6 or 7 years to a book, you're probably also writing about where you came from. And for me, I kind of ended up writing about my two parents. My father is a history buff, and my mother was an artist and introduced me to the great outdoors and mountains and forests. And so getting to write a book that kind of did or engaged both of those things was a lot of fun. Books like this are long projects. This one took me 6 or 7 years, and that's a period during which kind of our work is invisible. So one of the fun things about awards like this is that they argue that we finished. So thanks.
This concludes the 88th Annual California Book Awards Ceremony. I hope that all of you here, writers and readers both, are as inspired by our winners as we are. In just a few moments, after the author and jury members have taken a few group photos, our winning authors will be ready to sign your books. So please feel free to purchase them and get them signed right out there. And thank you so much for joining us.